Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us. Whether this is your first webinar with Consolidated Planning or your fourth or 40th, thank you so much for being here and for spending the next hour or so with us as we learn about whether the issues that you're seeing with your child could be just delayed speech or it could be autism. So I have a couple of things to go over before we get started. Again, I'm super thankful to all of you for spending the next hour or so with us. Since we're on webinar mode, we cannot see you or hear you. So feel free to enjoy your lunch or snack or have a drink. We can't see you anyway, so no worries there. Any questions or comments that you have, I would really appreciate it if you would put them into the chat box. And then that way I can keep track of the questions for our speaker today and make sure that we get to as many answers as we can for you. However, if we don't get to all the answers and we don't get to all of your questions, feel free to set up an appointment to talk to Morgan or myself one-on-one with any personal questions that you have or something that you might not want to share in front of a room full of strangers, so to speak, a virtual room full of strangers. We are recording today's webinar and we will put it on our YouTube channel. We are also going to send you a link to whatever email you used to register for today's webinar. We will send you a link to the YouTube channel and we will send you the slides. So anything you see in the slides today that is a clickable link, you'll be able to click it when you get these slides later on today. So I do have a few slides to go over and then I'll introduce our other partners today. So Consolidated Planning Group, that's who I am with. I'm Michelle Morris from Consolidated Planning Group. We are a financial planning firm, first and foremost, located just outside of Houston, Texas. We serve families all across the United States, and we've been doing this for over 30 years. The owner of our company has two special needs kids, and that's why our entire, company goal is to help educate families who have special needs loved ones, to make it easier on you and so that you don't have to go through all the trials and tribulations and sort through everything yourself, because there's a lot and it's very difficult to find, find answers in a world of so much noise, right? So we help with insurance, securities, investments, things like that, and helping you make sure you have all the benefits in place that you deserve for your family. We are members of the Special Needs Planning Academy, and we are also National Social Security Advisors. When I'm talking about special needs planning, families come to us for help with things like protection plans for your family. Think life insurance, disability protection, things like that. Life insurance can be a great way to fund a special needs trust once you're gone. So it's really important to understand how that can help you. We talk about lifetime care for your loved one. How much will it cost once you are gone for someone else to step in and take care of your loved one? We help with transition planning. There are all kinds of great residential, vocational, and educational options beyond high school. We don't want anybody just to graduate to the couch. We want them to graduate and find something to continue with. We help families with ABLE accounts. That's one place where you can set aside money where it won't count against their government benefits. And of course, like I said, we're here to advocate and educate. It's really important in our world that you work with professionals who really understand the nuances of special needs, because there are so many things that you have to know, or else you could mess it up. For example, I spoke with a family who They got on SSDI right away because dad passed away, unfortunately, and they were able to get SSDI, which is great, but they missed signing up for SSI, and now they're not going to be able to qualify for Medicaid, which is really important. It's things like this that not everybody knows. Not every financial advisor is well equipped to deal with questions related to special needs planning. As a matter of fact, it's fewer than a tenth of a percent of all the advisors in the United States who understand this stuff. So you're in the right place when you're dealing with consolidated planning. Excuse me, I'm so sorry. So we want you to think about, like I said, what is the future going to look like? What do you hope the future will look like for you and your family? What residential options, vocational options, educational options speak to you? And developing a plan earlier is always better than waiting. Whether your child is an infant or 18 years old or 38 years old, it doesn't matter. Now is the time to start planning. It's never too early. It's never too late. We're not going to, you know, make fun of you or get you in trouble for not doing something you should have already done. We're here to look from now to the future and help make it the best possible. So make careful considerations also before you just say, oh, a sibling is going to step in once we pass away to take care of Jacob. Well, maybe Sarah, Jacob's sister, when you pass away, maybe Sarah will have her own family and her own goals and her own life and feel like Jacob is a little bit of an obligation. You don't want that for Sarah. And maybe Jacob, when he's a little bit older, he's been living with Sarah all of his life as sister. And then all of a sudden she's trying to take on the role of mom, and Jacob might feel a little bit resentful about that as well. So make careful considerations about the dynamics in your family before you automatically just allow a sibling to step into the role of parent, okay? We have more tips at the end of this webinar, as well as how you can reach Consolidated Planning Group to talk about this sort of thing, about the money side of special needs planning. I've also put my contact information for Consolidated Planning Group in the chat box. Again, please put any questions or comments you have into the chat box. We will get to as many as we can. Next, I want to bring out Leslie. And Leslie Hernandez, thank you so, so much for hosting us today and for allowing us to reach out to the families that you work with to provide this information. Do you want to talk to us a little bit about what you do and your organization?
Yes, of course, Michelle. Thank you so much as well. And I just want to introduce myself. So my name is Leslie Hernandez, and I'm the regional coordinator for Partners Resource Network PEN Project. I am taking care of Region 18. Partners Resource Network is a parent and training information center for Texas. PRN serves 122 of the 254 counties in Texas. We are a nonprofit organization funded by the Office of Special Education Programs. We provide free resources and training for parents of children with disabilities and self-advocates. PRN exists to empower and support Texas families and individuals impacted by disabilities or special health care needs. And PRN serves parents and family members of children and youth with disabilities from ages 0 to 26. We also serve youth advocates with disabilities ages 14 through 26. And once again, our services are completely free. Thank you so much to Michelle and Morgan and everyone for being here today. And now I'm going to turn it over to Morgan. And I will also, I'm sorry, before I turn it over, add my information in the chat box for you all to have. Thank you. Now you can turn it over to Morgan.
Hi, I'm Morgan. Thank you so much, Michelle, for having me on with your company, which I think is fabulous. And Leslie, thank you so much for specifically recommending me and to get in touch with Consolidated Planning. And I'm so happy to be here. And it's a funny story. Let me share this really quickly. I didn't even realize I had kind of heard of Consolidated Planning because I got on their email list because I also am a parent of two children with special needs. And I started noticing emails from Miss Meredith, who was my contact to get in touch for this webinar. And And that was to my work email. And then for my personal email, I started noticing, paying attention to some of the webinars coming up, and it took me probably way longer than it should have, that this was from the same company. And so then I put two and two together finally, and I was like, oh, look, I'm speaking for that. I'm on that email list and I'm speaking for them. What an honor. So I'm really excited to be here and happy to share what I know about this and answer any questions. Hopefully make this subject a little bit more clear. It can be a little bit difficult. Yeah. I have myself and my partner have a clinic in Odessa called Mojo Speech Therapy. I've been a speech therapist since 2011. And I work primarily with early education. 0 to 5 is where I, 2 to 5 is where I love. And probably about 75% of my caseload is kiddos with autism or who are waiting for to get a diagnosis ruled in or out. So, okay.
Thank you, Morgan, for being here.
I'm excited. Thank you. To just kind of, there's a lot of different overlapping definitions. Some terms are used interchangeably. So I wanted to kind of start there. Speech delay, typically in speech world, in speech pathology world, we mean language delay. Language means use of words and vocabulary, and speech means use of speech sounds. So, if you hear that, sometimes doctors don't know the difference. So just for your purposes, speech may be a problem with speech sounds, or somebody might say, I have concerns about speech, and they may be talking about language use. So there is a difference, and some people, it's hard to tell if it's a true language disorder or a speech disorder, or if it's, merely just a delay. Delay would be things are happening along track, just delayed in the right order, but the timeline is just off. Also, ASHA, which is the Speech, Language, and Hearing Accreditation Agency, notes that if it is a delay, there's no other disabilities present. So everything looks typical. There's no ear infections or other disabilities. It's just a delay. We don't know why. It's just late emergence of language. We don't know why. Okay. Expressive language is everything you're able to express back out verbally and non-verbally, use of language. And receptive language is what you understand verbally and non-verbally. I did want to spend I wanted to go over very quickly the definition of autism spectrum disorder according to the DSM-5, because they're pretty specific. According to the DSM-5, there's 5 tenets. You have to have persistent deficits in social communication across multiple contexts. You have to have restricted, repetitive patterns of behavior or interests and activities. This can look like insistence on sameness, so that rigid behavior. I need to do the same things all the time. I only like the same things all the time. It also can include sensory processing differences. I don't like the way that feels. These symptoms must be present in early developmental period and then, continuing on across the lifespan, although they can be masked by learning coping strategies later in life. They must cause significant impairment in life activities, and they cannot be explained by some other disability. So you can't have an intellectual disability and then that looks like autism. So then it's not autism. And then on top of that, there's levels of severity too. And going from most levels of support which is level 3, to least levels of support, which is level 1. So they're pretty specific about that. To know about what we're talking about, if it is a speech delay, speech disorder, or possibly something more, you need to know developmental milestones. It's a great place to start. As a parent, if you're having questions, check out some developmental milestones. This link takes you to some really good charts, and it divides it up by age groups for your specific child or interest, area of interest, you can see what they're doing as far as like expressive language and receptive language. Really good charts. It's from ASHA, which again is my accreditation agent association. For the purposes of time, I'm going to kind of skim over those pretty quickly, and we're going to jump actually to slide number 8, Miss Michelle, which starts us in the 12 to 24 months.
Okay, 12 to 24. There we go.
That's really where people would start seeing more of the communication milestones, the true communication milestones start to come out. And then if they're not coming out, that's when we would start to have some concerns. So here's when you would start to understand very simple instructions and questions, being able to follow some super simple instructions. Maybe you can start to point to a few body parts. That's hearing and understanding. You can go to the next slide. As far as talking, you might start to hear some, you want to have already heard babbling. And so some of those, sounds by now, P, B, M, and H, they might start asking some questions by now, who, what, and where, maybe. So they might be very, very simplistic questions of these. They're not going to ask big, long versions of these, but very, very simplistic questions. I go, two-word utterances. And it's also good to keep in mind around this age is that some two-year-olds are just putting two words together, and that's okay. And some two-year-olds are talking in four-word sentences, and that's okay. Both are still okay by your two-year-old marker. I mean, there's such a wide range of what's acceptable and typical at this time, because some kids are growing really, really fast in this area, and some kids take a little bit longer, and it doesn't mean they're disordered or even delayed. So I hear that a lot. Their older sister did a lot faster development. They talked so much more, or the little girls in her daycare class talk much more than her, and maybe, but it doesn't mean she's disordered. So
one thing I always like to say when we're talking about, if you don't mind me taking just a second,
yes, please.
When we're talking about comparing your child to other children in the neighborhood or in the classroom or in the family, a lot of people say, oh, you know, if a flower isn't blooming, you change the dirt or whatever. I like that one, but I like to think of it as my favorite snack, which is popcorn. I make my popcorn on the stove in the pot. You put in the oil, it's all on the same burner. You put all the kernels in the same oil at the same time. They never, ever all just pop. It's a little bit at the beginning, a whole bunch in the middle, and a few stragglers. And that's how kids are. And that's okay. You know, most of the popcorn kernels do eventually pop. Some don't, and that's fine. Some pop really early, and that's fine. They all taste delicious. So it doesn't matter. So don't compare, don't get stuck on those comparisons, because they're all different.
Exactly. Exactly. Which is hard. I'm a parent. I understand. It's hard not to, but by 2 to 3 years, as far as receptive language, you want to start hearing that they're understanding more vocabulary, like opposite words, go and stop, big and little, and that they're picking up new words quickly. You should see that they've kind of reached this stride in understanding new vocabulary, and they can incorporate it quickly and have it. They don't have to be retaught new words over and over again. They just have soaked it up. So, and talking, you want to hear them talking during play. You want to hear them talking about things that are not right here in front of them. And you want to be able to understand. You want to be able to start hearing and understanding about 50% by now, at least. They should have consistent words for familiar people and places and things. This is where you start hearing, but why? But why? and which is good, because that opens the door for additional conversational turns, which is really important. They're asking you when they say why. Yes, it's annoying sometimes. They are just kind of talking to hear themselves talk, but really they're also talking so that you can talk too, which is huge. That's huge. That conversational turn taking, they're opening the door for you to fill in some more conversation too, for two-way communication. So I know that those constant questions can get really grating, but two-way communication is super important. Okay. 3 to 4 years receptive language. They should understand the concepts for familial relationships. They should definitely understand and respond when you call from another room. I know we have selective hearers, and I hear that a lot, and I don't love hearing that very much, because I want, even if you don't respond to your name because you're mad at your mom, if your mom is in the same room and you, and she calls your name, you should at least expect an interruption in activity, or a turn towards it, or a stinky face side eye, or something like that. But a total lack of response when someone calls your name is definitely a concern. And that actually is a concern from more like the 12 to 24 month age. But they should definitely be consistently coming to their name when you call them. They're starting to understand pronouns around here and know some color and shape words by now too. And then talking, they're starting to talk a lot, hopefully by now. If everything is on track, they're starting to understand that toy versus toys, bird versus birds is important. They're understanding that some words kind of sound funny and they sound the same, like hat and cat. And they might not know that, oh, that's a rhyme, but they understand that there's patterns within words. You should be hearing about 4 word questions. They should be able to answer questions logically at an age-appropriate level, of course. And then if you ask some questions, some basic questions about what happens in their day, you should be able to hear, they should be able to follow up with some questions about what's going on in their day. And then building upon that, they should be able to follow longer instructions using temporal concepts like after, yesterday, before, first, next, last. And then at school and at home, they should be understanding the vast majority of what's going on, what's being said. And then talking, you should hear pretty much all of their speech sounds develop by the end of their five-year-old year. They might still have some errors with TH and R and L's. Those are kind of some harder sounds, but they should not have omitted any consonants. So for instance, if they're saying ca for a cat, still, if you're hearing total consonant omissions altogether in words, that's a red flag for speech sound disorder. They should be able to name letters and numbers, tell short stories, and understand that you're supposed to talk in different ways depending on your environment. Like at school and at church, I have to talk quietly. And then when I'm outside, I can yell and scream and play loud. They should be able to change that register is what we would call that. Okay, so you have concerns. You've looked at the developmental milestones. You go, yes, my child is doing some of these, but not all of these. I have concerns. What do I do? The first step would be to talk with your doctor. So think of your pediatrician as kind of your medical hub or medical home base. If you need any referrals to anybody, you should be pushing them through him. You don't have to have a referral necessarily from him, a piece of paper from your pediatrician, but you should be kind of help filtering decisions through him. And if you don't have a doctor that will support you in that, then consider getting a new pediatrician, because that's important. Get an evaluation from a licensed speech language pathologist familiar with pediatric language disorders. Speech language pathology has a huge scope of practice. If someone asked me to suddenly go work in a skilled nursing facility, I would feel out of my range. I would feel out of my league. I would need to go get some continuing education. Technically, I'm licensed, but that's not my comfort zone. So not every licensed speech language pathologist is necessarily the one you want looking at your kid. It's okay. Get a good feel for it. And then based on these two conversations with your pediatrician and an evaluation and your own clinical, your own mommy heart or your own daddy heart, consider a referral to a specialist, like a developmental pediatrician or a pediatric behavioral health specialist. Do we have any questions so far?
I don't see any yet, but don't forget, everybody, if you have any questions that come up or you want to join in the conversation, you can just put that in the chat.
I'm happy to stop and chat. No problem. Okay. So a side note about autism spectrum disorders and related to speech language pathology. A speech language pathologist cannot diagnose autism spectrum disorder. Often you'll hear, and I hear this a lot, the doctor sent me to get an evaluation for autism and they'll send them to a rehab clinic or to my speech clinic. And I always make sure to tell parents, I can't diagnose. I can't tell you for certain if your child has autism spectrum disorder or not. I can tell you if I think you need to continue on this journey of looking, of determining whether or not he does. I can tell you if I think I see red flags or concerns. I can tell you if I think you need to continue on with the referral to the specialist who specifically does diagnose for that. But I can continue on with some recommendations, but I can't diagnose. Now, speech language pathologists are often one of the first interventionists to work with kids who have yet to be diagnosed, because communication delays are often are usually the earliest concerns. Also, speech and language pathologists can assist with referrals and resources in addition to therapy.
Morgan, we do have a question now, a suggestion. Could you comment a little bit about families that are bilingual or when there's even trilingualism and how that can affect, speech delays?
So it doesn't make things worse. It doesn't make things worse.
Good.
Some people will tell you, oh, stop, let's do one language. But really, research shows even like in populations of kids with Down syndrome and things like that, it's not slowing them down in their language development. Now, you have to think about whatever level of potential they were probably going to get to. Bilingualism, trilingualism won't slow them down. It's not going to slow them down, essentially. So I always tell parents, don't stop what you're doing. If you're speaking only Spanish and your kiddo is speaking English because he's picked it up from school or daycare, or Cocomelon or whatever, well then just keep doing what you're doing. Your kiddo will have a fantastic ear for Spanish, will probably know more Spanish than you think, and, will continue to develop, the way he's been doing. If one family member speaks English and one family member speaks Spanish, it's okay. The kiddo is going to learn. There is research does show that there's kind of a quiet period whenever a kiddo is learning two different, is kind of switching languages over. But if you think about most, there's no three-year-old that is proficient in any one language. So even monolingual three-year-olds, four-year-olds, five-year-olds are not proficient in one language. And so there's no reason to expect that a five-year-old should be proficient in two languages. I mean, so I think sometimes we put unrealistic expectations on what they should be doing based on if they're hearing two languages. We forget, we're not expecting that out of a kid with one language either. So I just tell parents, keep doing what you're doing. Research, actually grown-ups know more than one language, it's good for your brain. So bilingualism is good for your brain. So if your kiddo can grow up knowing two languages, do it.
Awesome. Thank you. I love this little girl. She's so cute.
Not my little girl, just some cute little internet girl, but she is adorable. Okay, so I cannot obviously speak for every single speech language pathologist and his method of evaluating, but I'm going to tell you a little bit what I'm looking for that helps me kind of piece out things. And I'm thinking about it in terms of layers. So there's a layer of communication, and then there's a layer of basic communication, and then it gets more and more subtle and more nuanced when we start thinking about those little bitty markers for autism. So, for example, we're talking about receptive language here. Is the kiddo listening? Step one, can you hear? That's very basic. If you can't hear nothing else, we have a bigger problem. We need to fix that first. So then layer number two, are you listening and attending when people are talking? Are you listening and attending to people and showing them that? Meaning, I just leaned forward and my eyebrows raised up. Do you have a listening face? I mean, non-verbally, are you showing your communication partners that you're listening and responding? Even if you haven't said another word, that's important. Or is this person talking and this person talking and this person talking and you have given nobody in the room any indication that you're listening at all? That's important. Are you listening and doing this in a way that people readily, that the general person would readily understand? I know some parents know their kiddos very, very well and know their clues. And even though I cannot tell that they're listening and paying attention, mom says, oh, no, 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 he did this. I know he's listening. Or he followed through with an instruction, even though facially, verbal, non-verbally, bodily, he gave no indication he was listening, except that he followed through with an instruction later. That's important. Play skills. Are you playing? Good. Are you playing with toys? Good. As opposed to, you know, are you dancing with your fingers, or are you just looking at the mirror, or are you playing with someone? Good. Are you playing with toys with someone? Are you playing with toys in a variety of ways? Are you playing with toys in a typical way? So I have seen one kiddo that I saw, he sat with his dad. He did not look at me. He's a boy. So for one, he sat in one spot for 20 minutes. Red flag. And he took a puzzle of shapes off the puzzle, shapes on the puzzle, shapes off the puzzle, shapes on the puzzle. Now this boy would look at me when I talked to him. He said a few words. He did all these other good things, but he did the same kind of play for 20 minutes. He could answer some questions, but he did the same kind of play for 20 minutes and he didn't move from his daddy's lap, which is highly unusual for a boy who's three. A boy who's three should be all over the room. I should have to test super fast. And I just kind of sat there. And then I finally figured out he was even going and doing the puzzle in the same order every time too. So that's very noteworthy. Okay. So if I were looking at a kiddo and I was looking over information from mom, hearing the kiddo or playing with this kiddo, and I know he's not babbling, he's doing an excellent job with gestures and facial expressions and nonverbal communication. Like, I have these little girls who are like, or they say, and they have these fantastic eyebrows that look at you and these fingers that do these things, but they're not talking. Well, then I'm much less concerned about those babies. Okay, let's put you in speech therapy so we can start talking. But the markers for autism, I'm much less concerned for that, because they're using so much more nonverbal communication, and they're understanding more nonverbal communication too. That's the other thing. You have to understand nonverbal communication too. I would like to hear words by 12 months, of course. These are kind of just general signs that you would have a speech delay only, a communication or language delay only. Like, it's going to come along. We just might need a little boost in the right direction. communication delays as far as receptive language, they're a little bit more red flaggy because a lot of these overlap with autism as well. Understanding sounds, you have to figure out, are you attending to sounds and understanding them, or are you just not understanding the words? Because that's important too. And we have to piece that out too. Okay. But then the things that I, again, highlighting the things that I'm looking at during evaluations is that insistence on sameness, which you see in play skills at this age, you see in play skills. Is your play highly repetitive or unusual? Are you using pretend play? If you are you including me? I see kids with some fantastic pretend play scripts, but they don't care if I'm in the room or not. And that's important too. Yes, pretend play is important, but cooperative back and forth pretend play is really important.
That interaction is so important instead of just being in their own world.
Yep. Come out and play with me. And that's half my job is how do I figure out how to get in with you? How do I get in and play with you? Understanding those gestures and using those gestures. There are kiddos who understand yes and no and who use yes and no and who point to things that they want. But I'm looking for a little bit more. Those are super, super basic, but I want the ones that are a lot more nuanced and creative, like a shrug, or do you have a thinking face? Those kinds of things. I'm looking for those, and very natural and organic, not included in your fantastic pretend play that you may have. Cause again, some kiddos are tough to figure out. Yes, facial expression, I covered that. Mm-hmm. My favorite treatment technique is what I do every day. I wanted to show a video, but Miss Meredith let me know that videos don't come out very well in this format. So I'll just try to tell you as best as I can.
Yes, it's not very
easy. That's okay. We'll leave plenty of time to answer questions. Not every speech therapist, again, is comfortable with treating autism spectrum disorders. So find someone that you feel comfortable with your kid. This is the same way there's a lot of scary things that you read about ABA. I think all of those are overrated. You just need to find therapists that you're comfortable with in any setting, in any therapeutic setting, OT, PT, ABA, speech therapy, your own personal therapist. Hello. If you need a counselor, find a counselor that you're going to feel comfortable with. That's just common sense, y'all. As far as therapy techniques, there's way too many to cover, but let me focus on what I do every day, which I think is pretty easy to just take home, and you guys can do it too. So step one, you have to find activities that your kiddo finds highly engaging. So if you find it highly engaging, but your kid doesn't, sorry, I love some toy food play, love toy food play. This kiddo today wanted to play with toy trains. I'm like, fine. I can do toy trains, but I like toy food better. So highly engaging to me is not necessarily high engaging to you. I don't like Coco Melon. I do like super simple songs. Sorry, I'm going to go with Coco Melon because the kiddo likes Coco Melon, because that's where I'm going to get the most bang for my buck. That's where we're going to get the most engagement. Okay, so then declarative language strategies, which we'll go over that definition, and core vocabulary, which we'll go over that definition.
So before we move on, can you tell us, you know, if somebody is just getting started, what kinds of questions should they be asking to find someone that would be a better fit for their family?
So if they maybe started with someone that they didn't feel like there was a lot of progress going on?
Well, that, or, you know, if they're just starting to look for somebody and they're talking to a couple of different speech language pathologists, and, you know, how can they kind of interview a couple of people to see if they're right for the job?
Well, first of all, if you're in an area where you're able to interview and choose, I mean, that's fantastic. That's amazing.
I mean, it's scary.
That is not where we live, but yes, if you're able to have one question I think you should ask is, what's your experience with kiddos with autism? And then specifically, what's your experience or with whatever population or need your child has? So if your child has apraxia of speech or Down syndrome or things like that, what's your experience in this area? And because not every therapist has a ton of experience in everything. Again, hearing impairment, if a kiddo came over here for hearing impairment, I have some. I would definitely like to go get some a little bit more continuing education and brush up on some skills, of course. I think just ask about their experience, ask about what techniques they have used and have found successful, and maybe even ask them what would they do differently? What techniques did they not like, and maybe try something different? I mean, just ask them to share their experiences, both maybe kind of a formal, what is your experience? And then how did you feel about it? Maybe if you can get a little bit more personal, how did you feel about it?
Perfect. I love that. Thank you.
I'm all touchy-feely, really, so I encourage everybody to get all touchy-feely. Okay, so declarative language, as a technique, I'm going to kind of cut to halfway down that paragraph. So declarative language, the strategy, the technique, is a way of giving a verbal cue so that the recipient is prompted to think of a solution and not prompted with the solution. You're not giving them the answer. You're helping them think to get to the right answer. So this is the opposite of a command. If you think of back to your English class, your grammar class, imperative language, an imperative sentence, which is a command, put the train on the track. There's one single response to that. The kid should put the train on the track. They have one opportunity to get it right, basically. And even if the kiddo doesn't understand that in words consciously, subconsciously, they feel I'm supposed to follow an instruction. The grown-up is giving me an instruction. And it's a little bit nerve-wracking. It puts some pressure. But if you use declarative language, I wonder if we could build a track. And then the kid goes, what track? There's a track in here? Or, I wonder if we have enough blocks to build a bridge. So maybe the blocks are right here and you're building a track. I wonder if we have enough blocks to build a track. I mean, to build a bridge. And so then the kid, hopefully, the point, the goal of this is to view your blocks that you're talking about and check them out and look at them and come along beside you. I don't know. Let's build these. Let's see if we can build this bridge. So doing this, it really takes practice, y'all. Doing this technique reduces stress on the kiddo. It allows for problem solving, which is fantastic. We want our kids to be problem solvers. Independent thinking, it reduces prompt dependency. Asking for help is like a speech therapy 101 goal. We want all of our kids to be able to ask for help. But we want them to know when they need help, not just ask for help automatically. Help, please. I mean, we want them to try first and determine, do I need help here or not? I didn't need help. So instead of saying, ask me for help, or say, help, please, which is imperative language, then you say, I'm here. Let me know if you need help. Or I wonder if you need help with that. And really give them enough space and opportunity and time, you have to go slow, to try it out first. I recommend, it's not, it didn't make it on this line. We can type it in there. But Linda K. Murphy's book, The Declarative Language Handbook, is fantastic. And it's about this. So then the next slide is core vocabulary,
Hold
which
on,
is.
the Declarative Language Handbook. Who was that by?
Linda K. Murphy.
Linda K, like KAY?
Just the letter K.
Okay. I am putting that in the chat box so that everybody can look that up. Okay, next slide.
A very short read, very simple. And I listened to it on audiobook, and she's very calming to listen to.
I love how you said, I wonder if you need help with that, especially if you are in a situation where you're seeing the child struggle a little bit. And of course, you don't want to just jump in and do it for them or solve it for them. I love that.
We are so type A speech therapists. We are so type A. We're like, I want to help you. Or at least want you to ask me for help. Or you're doing it wrong. And it really takes a lot of practice to kind of sit back and go slow. And maybe the kiddo is doing it his own way. Or maybe you need to parallel play over here and demonstrate it a little bit first. And you can do that. You can narrate what you're doing. Okay, I like what you're doing over there. Like is a core vocabulary word, by the way. I'm going to go over that in a second. I like what you're doing. I'm going to play over here like this. Let me know if you need help. And just be there with them, playing beside them. Hopefully they'll allow you a little window of space to come play with them too, or they'll come over to you. Okay, so core vocabulary, which I referenced, it's just a very small set of our language that is, I mean, it's basic words that are used to describe so many, many, many different things. So Baker and Hill say that 80% of what we say is communicated with only 200 of the most basic words in our language. And I put a few of them right there. See, want, go, stop, on, off, like, more. How many times do you say on? How many different ways do we use the word on in English? I'm sorry, this is English only right now. So turn on the light, put your shoes on, get your jacket on, put that on the table. What's on your head? I mean, put your earrings on. There's different ways, turn the TV on. There's different ways you can use on a million different times a day. And it's different. It's not necessarily with objects. It just has different meanings. And it has, so if you teach the word on and a kiddo can use the word on, that's a valuable word because he can use it 100 times a day in one day. So if 200 basic words are 80% of what we say, how much power can we give by teaching a kiddo 20? If we taught a kiddo 20 basic core words in 6 months' time, how much more would his world be opened up if he could use and understand just those 20? So, and these are so easy to slip into your declarative language because you're just narrating what you're doing. You're just playing with the kiddo using these core vocabulary words, which are everywhere. They're literally everywhere. You're going to play with trains. Okay, we're going to work on, off, go, stop, help, maybe. Okay, we're going to work with food. We're going to use like, don't like, yes, no, all done, more. All of these are very basic words. We could talk about all the different colors of the train cars. We could name all the different kinds of food. Or we could give them more power and teach them these core words. And then we can play with trains or food or farm sets, or we can go to the grocery store and talk about anything there. Or we can ask for help when we need our shoes on. Or we can tell mom, I don't like blueberries, but I do like graham crackers. Open the door. Stop putting those socks on me. I don't like them. I like sandals better. I don't care if it's 20 degrees outside. So we need, our kiddos need to have those powerful words that go all the way through their world. And you can do this by finding their favorite activities and then using these good declarative language and go very slow, give the kids lots of space, wait for them to let you in, and then use core vocabulary.
It could just be Googled, right? You could look
core vocabulary. Yes. There's lots of different versions. Usually you're going to find it with, on a big icon board, like a grid sort of thing. You don't have to use it with a communication device. You can just kind of focus and be intentional when you're talking. Or like if you want to, again, train, well, then focus on and off, stop and go. Pick four of the core words and then focus on those during your play. Now, kiddos who are, you're thinking, okay, yes, we do have autism, or we're probably looking at an autism diagnosis in the future. They're often very, very visual, and they like pictures. And so that's where that AAC and the video I had, it's not going to show. It's going to blur it all out. Okay. I have a core board that was on the video that I had hoped to show, but it didn't show. And I'm doing those things, same things that I talked to you guys about, except every time I say on and off, I'm pointing to a symbol that says on and off. And every time I say I like it, you point to like and you don't like. And it's very natural and easy, and it's very informal. So I just sit on the floor with this core board, which y'all can't see because the Zoom is blurring everything out. And I point to the pictures on this clipboard, and we play with toys all day long. And sometimes I start with a YouTube video, like, do you like broccoli? And then I can point to the core words alongside, do you like broccoli? And then we stop the YouTube video after one or two times, and then we play with food. And then we like whatever toy food I have on hand.
It's my favorite. Morgan, if you could send that video to Meredith, and after this webinar is over, I'll remind her to include that video along with the link and everything she sends to everybody after this. So we will be able to watch it.
Great. Yes, I sent it to her in our earlier talks.
Perfect. So if anybody wants to reach out to you and ask you questions, do you work specifically in a certain area, or are you able to work over Zoom virtually, anything like that? How do you offer your services, and how can we get to you?
So we're in Odessa. We are taking new patients. We just hired on a lovely new therapist. Yay! And oh, by the way, she is bilingual. I need to tell everybody in Odessa that, because
oh, perfect. Okay.
Those are hard to come by. So she does speak Spanish. So yes, y'all hit me up for that. We don't currently have any teletherapy clients. That's not to say that we're against it. The population that I specialize in is not the best for teletherapy. They're better at, let me consult with mom. Let me give you some helps at home. Let me make up a core board for you, and maybe we can demonstrate some therapy, and then you go home and you try it for a while. So that kind of thing, I'd be much more willing to help out with, around the 2 to 4 population. Happy to do that. You can email me or call me, and we can talk about that. If you're in Midland, Odessa area, then yes, absolutely give us a call, and we would love to set up an evaluation.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Morgan. This has been so eye-opening in terms of what to watch out for and what to be expecting at different time frames. I love that so much. So I do have a couple more slides just to let the audience know. If you have any questions, we have a few minutes left. Go ahead and put your questions in the chat box while I let you know about some other things coming up and thinking about. And Morgan, of course, feel free to put your info in the chat box so that people can copy that easier. We offer webinars like this and on all kinds of different helpful topics. Several times a week. They all go to our YouTube channel, but this is a list of kind of some of the things that we talk about. And I just want you all to know that you can go to this link, which will take you to our website events tab. That's where we have all of our upcoming webinars listed. You can register for webinars there. And then you'll get a reminder to attend. But even if you don't attend, you will receive a copy of the slides and the webinar link in your email. We also want to let you know that we have an amazing opportunity coming up. Temple Grandin is going to be speaking on one of our webinars. So you might want to check that out. If you're unfamiliar, Temple Grandin is a rock star in the autism community. She, now I'm not much of a big agriculture person or anything like that, but apparently she changed the way ranchers do things, and there's a movie and you should all check it out. And we're super excited that we have this celebrity coming to speak for us coming up. So check in the upcoming webinars for that. This is our team. Again, we are based just outside of Houston, but we serve families all across Texas and all across the United States. The advisors are the top row. Allison and Jeff own the company. And then there's my glamour shot and my husband with the big beard. We also have this great staff. If you look at all of those smiling faces, please remember those kind smiles as your phone starts ringing in the next week, because we will be reaching out to ask you if you have any more questions or if you would like to schedule your free consultation. So please don't hang up on our staff. They work really hard. The free consultation that we are offering, it's a Zoom call. It's usually about 30 to 45 minutes. You get to talk to me or Andy or Allison, and we are available to answer any questions you have about financial planning for special needs families, about benefits, about ABLE accounts, all of that kind of stuff. It's completely confidential. We do aim to answer your questions first and then get to know you and your family a little bit. And then we'll, of course, tell you how we work and what we charge and how the process goes. And you can decide from there if you're interested in working with us. You can use that QR code, or you can call or email us to set up an appointment. We've also included on this slide at the bottom the links to our YouTube channel, Instagram, our podcast, which is another way you can get all of these webinars. If you don't want to sit and watch, you can just listen on our podcast. And then, of course, our Facebook page, where we share a lot of great, interesting information. Hopefully, you find it interesting. And we advertise our webinars and things like that. So please, please reach out to us. Or when we reach out to you, at least be kind to our staff. We're here because we want to help you. You can reach out to us. You can reach out to Morgan. She is available for all of your speech questions. And of course, Leslie can help with the Partners Resource Network and all of that information. So again, I thank you for being here with us for the hour today. Feel free to reach out if there's anything at all that you need help with, or if you just want to send us a note of encouragement or thanks, or, you know, you can keep the criticisms today. I don't want those today. I want all the kindness. So you can feel free to send those notes as well if you have anything to say, or if you have any suggestions for future topics that you want to hear about. All right. Well, I don't see any more questions in the chat box. Again, Morgan and Leslie, thank you. And thank you everybody who has attended today. Go set up your free consultations and have a great day, okay? Thanks everybody. Bye-bye.